afraid of height sound. I don't want to be lived through a vicarious occasion.
Good morning, Penguin Radio. DJ Homeschool here with Real Life, your weekly Wednesday morning show, right here at radio.dominican.edu. It is 8 a.m., and I hope life is treating you well this beautiful morning. I'm here in the studio, and I'm ready to finish up this crazy week. It's been midterm, so it's been a little bit hectic, but it's a good hectic, though. I'm working on a bunch of term papers and projects, and I'm studying for a psychology midterm, and I realized I'm not a very good studier. I'm a very active and bubbly person, so sitting down and reading and rereading and memorizing, that is not quite my forte. I am more of a project, get out there, do some real life application, like I'm that type of learner. But you know what? That is what college is about, right? Expanding your horizons. I figured that, you know, if I can last a weekend camping in a tent in the wilderness, I can study for a midterm or two. I've been really, really diligent about scheduling library time and making sure my work schedule works with my school and study schedule. And that's really helping. Also, a big thing that I've been doing is meal prepping at home. And this way, I don't have to run out and get food, and I'm eating things that keep me energized, keep me awake, and just keep my body a lot more healthy rather than just, you know, running from work to fast food to the library or getting. I'm a big fan of Chipotle. I eat Chipotle way too much. So I've been trying to cut back on that. And it's been a really, really good time saver. It doesn't take long to get a few things at the grocery store, put them in little to-go bins like, you know, Tupperware. And it's a really big money saver as well. I've been looking at my bank account and I realized that, you know, there's money in there and it's staying there for days and days and days and days on end rather than me going out and spending it. So that's a really fun feeling too. I really like that. But aside from all of that, I really have a lot more energy, and I've actually lost 8 pounds, so that's made me really happy too. I cut out all fast food, fried food, sugar, and gluten. And I drink about 100 ounces of water a day in my really nice, cute pink water bottle. And a really cool thing that I want to tell you guys about is I picked up a liquid water enhancer at Target the other day. And it is my new favorite thing. It is absolutely delicious. It's a cherry limeade flavor. And I'm not a big fan of artificial cherry flavors, but I don't know if any of you listeners have ever been to a Sonic, but they don't have them in the Bay Area, and it's like a fast food, but it's like old-fashioned style drive-in, and they're known for their drinks. They have milkshakes for those who like milkshakes, but my favorite thing there is they have cherry limeades, and they are absolutely delicious. And they even have diet ones, which is good since I'm type 1 diabetic. Still, they aren't super, super good for you. But I found this water enhancer, and it is absolutely delicious. It's a little squirt bottle, and it's sugar-free, and it really gives me a little taste of my childhood. Plus, it's super cheap, and it's super convenient. You can just throw it in your backpack or your purse or whatever you need, and it's great for when you're looking for a little afternoon pick-me-up treat or you just get tired of regular old water. So I wanted to tell you guys about that. Go pick it up at Target. It's their Target brand, Market Pantry, and it is delightful. They have a bunch of other flavors too if cherry limeade isn't something that you are interested in. So coming up today, we are going to get real about your sleep habits, the benefits of honey, and how to talk with your doctors and student health. And then we're going to have a little bit of inspiration from a dolphin named Winter. So keep listening right here on Penguin Radio. I'm DJ Homeschool. Let's get real. First up on the agenda today, we have wellness, sleep patterns, and how to ensure a better night's sleep. So I know I personally have a really hard time sleeping a lot. I was never a napper as a little baby or a young kid. Sorry, mom and dad. But when I had a bedtime, you know, my parents finally gave up on that, I think, when I was like 12. But I would go and I'd read an entire book in one night, almost every night. You know, I read so many books as a little kid. Chicken Soup for the Soul books were my favorites. Did any of you guys read those? I absolutely love them. I think I've read every single one of them, even if they didn't pertain to me. I know I've even read a couple of the sports editions. I'm not really interested in sports all of that much, but my dad was, and they were there, and it was something to read. So I would also keep a journal and, you know, my MP3 player, you know, a little Walkman CD player, because they didn't have anything really. They didn't have iPods back then. But that's a weird thought to think that they didn't have iPods back then. But I've been a night owl for my entire life. You know, I often wouldn't fall asleep until after my parents were asleep. But on the positive side of that, it works really well for me now that I'm a little bit older and I have lots of homework, or I need to work late and then I have lots of homework. And it's a bummer because a lot of my friends really struggle with the late nights and then having to go to class. And of course, you know, we're all human, and that's something that we're all going to struggle with. Eventually, it's going to, you know, kind of wear down on our body, but it's not too horribly bad on me with that whole night owl thing. I don't struggle with it when I need to, or when I, you know, need to stay up late and make things happen. So I can't tell you how many times my days and nights have gotten switched up from staying up so late till, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, sleeping mid-morning, and then going to my classes in the afternoon. It can be a really bad situation for anybody, but it takes a couple days to get back into the swing of things. And so it's really important to work on your sleep habits. And my grandma is always telling me that I need to sleep more and that not sleeping is bad for your health. And she's completely right. As I grow up into an adult, I mean, I'm almost 21. So does that mean now I get to call myself an adult? Am I a grown up? I think so. Maybe it's once you're fully financially independent that you're an adult, but I'm not really sure. But I've been making strides in my life towards a healthier, more well-rounded adult, and sleep is definitely one of my personal downfalls. So my grandma, well, both of my grandmas, actually, both Grandma Sandy and Grandma Janice, they are both really smart, and they're always telling me to sleep every time they call me. Are you sleeping enough? No, Grandma, but I love you anyways. But I've consulted some sources, some professionals, and I wanted to kind of see what they thought about getting more sleep and report back to you and see if maybe I could throw in a few tips and tricks for you guys to ensure some better sleep. So the Mayo Clinic has plenty to say about sleep. So here's what they have to say. And I really have a funny feeling that a lot of you will be able to relate to this article. When I read this, I was like, wow, I don't do any of that. So this is something that I'm working on right now in my life. And hopefully it'll be a little bit of benefit to you as well. So number one is stick to a sleep schedule. I don't think anyone in college has ever had a sleep schedule. I actually know that I do have one friend who, she has always been a really big sleeper. She's always required a lot of sleep. She would sleep like 12 hours a night, almost 10, 12 hours. She'd go to bed so early in junior high and high school. And so that's something that, you know, she kind of struggles with. But she's really diligent about making a sleep schedule, and she really makes that a priority for her. But, you know, it says that to go to bed and to wake up at the same time every day. You know, obviously, sometimes that's not always possible to do the exact same thing every single day. But make it a habit to, you know, kind of try and keep that pattern even on your weekends and holidays and days off. I know a lot of you college kids out there like me, you don't exactly get days off, but you know what they mean. So being consistent reinforces your body's sleep-wake cycle, and it promotes a better sleep at night. And there's a little catch, though. If you don't fall asleep within 15 minutes, get up and go do something that's somewhat relaxing. You know, don't start cleaning the kitchen or doing your math homework, but go back to bed when you're tired. And if you're agonizing over falling asleep, you're going to find it a little bit harder to go to bed. So don't stress about it. Get up, go do something relaxing, take a bath, read a book, you know, something of that nature. Number two is to pay attention to what you eat and drink. This is where I've been doing really well, and so I'm really proud of myself about that. But it says don't go to bed either hungry or stuffed. You want a nice little balance. If you have discomfort, that's going to keep you up. And you got to limit how much you drink right before bed, because that will kind of mess with your internal body and it could wake you up in the middle of the night. Three big things that deserve caution are nicotine, caffeine, and alcohol. I'm not a smoker or a drinker, but I definitely drink my fair share of caffeine. So the stimulating effects of the nicotine and the caffeine, those take hours to wear off your body, and they can wreak havoc on your quality of sleep. And it says that even though alcohol might make you sleepy at first, it will disrupt your sleep patterns later on in the night. Number three is to create a bedtime ritual. I've been doing this and I really enjoyed it. I've been using, I talked about it a couple shows ago about my new Juice Beauty face products, and I've been really diligent about washing my face, putting on a nice serum and a moisturizer, and just putting moisturizer all over my body. So that's been my bedtime ritual, and it really kind of just winds me down. I take 5 minutes just to myself. I feel nice and clean before I get in my nice comfy bed. And so I really like this, creating a bedtime ritual. You want to do the same things every night to tell your body that it's time to wind down. And this could include, you know, if you like to take warm baths before bed or a shower, reading a book or listen to soothing music. Try and have the lights dim. You don't want to have the lights on. You don't want to be wide awake. These are supposed to be relaxing activities, and those are going to promote better sleep and ease the transition between wakefulness and drowsiness. You have to be careful of using the TV and other electronic devices, which I know is really hard, but that needs to become a part of your bedtime routine. Ditch the digital media. A lot of research is showing that screen time and other media use really interferes with your sleep. And I know that I've experienced that firsthand. I know that when I fall asleep to a TV or to my computer, if I'm watching something online on HBO Go or whatever it may be, I really have noticed that I don't sleep as well. I did it last night. I turned on a movie and I really didn't sleep all that well. So that's food for thought. Obviously, this is a little bit more obvious, but for others, you know, this is something that maybe you're not used to. You have to get comfortable. I know this can be really difficult for those of you sleeping in a dorm, or, you know, you have a really loud roommate, but you need to have a space that is ideal for sleeping. Often this can mean like a cool or warm, depending on how you like to sleep. I personally like to sleep really cool and dark, you know, a dark environment and somewhere that's quiet. So you may need to consider using room darkening shades. And if that's not possible, you can get a little face mask, a little sleep mask that can kind of keep some of that light out. And something that you might need to consider is earplugs or a fan or another device that creates an environment that really suits your needs. If you have a roommate, you might need earplugs and, you know, get a sound machine. They even have them, an app on your iPhone. I have a really good friend who uses that. She puts it in every night, and it's really cool because they have timers that automatically time off. That way you don't have to listen to the sounds of the rainforest for, you know, the entire night. But make sure that your mattress and pillows can contribute to your better sleep habits as well. You need to have good bedding, and, you know, bedding is really subjective, so choose what's most comfortable to you. And for those of you that share a bed, you know, if you're married or sleep with a partner, or you may even have children or pets, sometimes pets take up more room in the bed than children, but try to set limits on how often they sleep with you. I know that can be really difficult, but sleeping with enough room is a really vital part of a good, good sleep. Number five is to limit daytime naps. Long daytime naps can really interfere with nighttime sleep, especially if you're struggling with insomnia or poor quality at night. If you choose to nap during the day, try to limit yourself to about 10 to 30 minutes and make it during the mid-afternoon. If you're working nights, you'll obviously need to make an exception. There's always exceptions, but try to follow the rules about the daytime sleeping as well. You know, 10 to 30 minutes, and make sure it's dark, and so your body doesn't think that it's daylight, and, you know, kind of switch up your routine. But in your internal clock needs to adjust. That way it doesn't interrupt your nighttime sleep as well. Number six, this is a big one that I've been doing as well. Going to the gym regularly to include physical activity in your daily routine. And regular physical activity can promote better sleep, and it will really help you fall asleep faster and get into a deeper sleep. Timing is super important though. If you exercise too close to bedtime, you might be too energized to fall asleep. And this was an issue for me the other night. I was wired after the library, and I have a membership to a 24-hour gym. And so I decided, you know, the library closes at midnight, and I decided that I was going to go to the gym at midnight. And so I got there, and I ended up riding like 6.5 miles on the bike, running 3 more miles. And by the time I got out of there, it was almost 2 in the morning. I got home and showered, and then I was just so pumped and energized. I ended up watching a movie, writing a paper, and, you know, didn't go to bed till 4 or 5 in the morning, and it was just bad news all around. So make sure you do your exercise at a good time of day. That way you can ensure that you are getting to bed on time. Number seven, and this is a huge, huge one, especially for all of you college students out there, manage your stress. And I know that's really hard to do. Just saying that kind of makes me giggle, because it's like, it's stress. It's not managed, you know, but you got to do your best. So when you have too much to do and too much to think about, your sleep is going to suffer. So you got to try to restore that peace and consider healthy ways to try and manage your stress. So start with the basics. You got to get organized. I know I've told you guys how much I love using my day planner and setting priorities and delegating tasks. And my teacher just told me about this really great website, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I want to say it's called Tuli. However, I'm going to report back on that to you guys next week. But what it is, it's virtual boards that help you project manage. So you have to be able to manage your time, figure out what needs to be done, and set it up, you know, starting with the first priority. That way you know this is absolutely what I have to get done. But you have to give yourself permission to take a break when you need one. That's the most important key. You know, go see your friends for a little bit, go for a 10-15 minute walk, take a 10-15 minute nap, whatever works for you. And before bed, just jot down what's on your mind, the first couple things that you have to do in the morning, and that will send you off to bed with a nice, relaxed, you know, productive mindset for the next day. And this is a huge one coming up, and it's knowing when to talk to your doctor. And we're going to have a little bit more on that coming up in our relationship section, how to build relationships with your doctor. But everyone has the occasional sleepless night. But if you have trouble sleeping, you're going to need to contact your doctor if you're having trouble sleeping consistently. Identifying and treating any underlying causes can really be the key to help you get the good night's sleep that you deserve. And I'm not one to go to the doctor after every little thing. You know, the minute I have a little sniffly nose, I'm not going to be heading to the doctor. But sometimes there may be an underlying cause. If you're having indigestion every night, that might be an underlying cause of food allergies. So you got to think about it that way. So I like to research these tips because I'm always trying to teach you listeners how to make your life a little bit better and a little bit happier. And I know a lot of people depend on sleep aids like NyQuil, ZQuil is a big one, and even something as big as Ambien. And that may be necessary for some people. I'm not discounting that. I know that sleep disorders are a really serious problem. But I like the more natural solutions because while I am a night owl, I don't have a sleep disorder. So lavender is it's not my absolute favorite scent. I think, to be honest, it would be coconut. But lavender is another really delicious, really relaxing scent. And using lavender essential oils as a sleep aid is a really great natural trick. And, you know, you have a lot of options. You know, not all essential oils are created equally. You know, there are some on the lower end of the price spectrum. There are some, you know, as anything, there's something that are a little bit more expensive, but they're basically all going to do the same things. So I read somewhere that you can put a few drops of lavender oil on your pillow and it will help you rest and become more relaxed by breathing in that scent, and therefore you'll be able to sleep better. And the rationale is that it's, you know, it's close to your head, so it's going to go to your nose and you'll breathe it in and become, it'll be a nice soothing scent for you. Well, I didn't want to drop it right on my pillow because it is an oil and it can stain the sheets. And I have, they're cotton sheets, but they're a little bit more silky and the oil would just go everywhere. And so I wanted to find an alternative, so I decided to use a piece of tissue. All you have to do is drop 2 to 3 drops of lavender oil directly on this piece of tissue and place it near your head, wherever that works. And you can post it on your nightstand. You can put that on your pillow or maybe post it to your headboard or your wall that's, you know, right directly above your head. And the scent of lavender will soothe you. And with this method, I find myself falling asleep more easily and being more relaxed. And I have an overall general better quality of sleep. You know, I wake up feeling refreshed. So if you guys want to try that, I know that there are also some sheet sprays available at Bed Bath & Beyond. And if lavender isn't your scent, you know, everyone likes different things. They have other scents like rain. I think they have one that smells, you know, they call it clean or whatever. You know, it's that laundry scent. I love that scent too. I know they have lavender, and that's just a nice little mist that's really, you know, diluted. And so it's safe to spray over your sheets and pillows. And hopefully that will help you guys sleep a little bit more. Well, I hope that my chat with you guys will help you catch some extra Z's and just become an overall more relaxed person. I know I've really been implementing a few of these tricks and they've really been helping me. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the best uses of honey in your beauty routine. So this is DJ Homeschool, and you're listening to Real Life on the one, the only, Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Welcome to another Bosco Break. Today I've got a few stories for you, starting with the man on the moon, but what scientists call Oceanus Procellarum, the huge dark splotch on the moon visible from Earth. Either way, how did it get there? One commonly held view is that a massive asteroid slammed into the young moon and left its mark, but researchers at MIT say they've got new evidence showing that the 1,800-mile-wide region came not from beyond, but from within. Specifically from a volcanic eruption that unleashed a large plume of magma deep within the moon's interior. As the lava made its way to the surface and cooled, it created the dark spots we see today. In their study, researchers say one of the giveaways is that the new data from NASA shows that the region's border is not actually round, but is instead rimmed by structures that run in straight lines and intersect at angles, similarly to a rectangle. Such a shape is hard to attribute to a collision, which would be expected to produce a more circular rim. Definitive proof might not come unless astronauts return to the moon, but in the meantime, astronomy writer Phil Plait at Slate thinks the theory makes sense. "I've always had a problem with the impact idea," he writes, adding that the secondary effects that would have accompanied such a huge meteor strike don't appear to be evident. In other news, if you happen to find some remnants of woven wool in your attic, in red, white, or blue, and marked Fort McHenry, the Smithsonian Institution would like to know. 200 years after a massive flag was hoisted over the fort in Baltimore that withstood a British attack, Americans from Maine to California may still have fragments from the original Star-Spangled Banner. Not long after the huge 30-foot by 42-foot flag, inspired an 1814 poem by Francis Scott Key that would become the national anthem, its caretakers began snipping off pieces. By the 1880s, about 20% had been lost. Cutting up a flag today could be considered desecration, but back then, the clippings were given away as keepsakes. "It was such a monumental moment in time that people felt they wanted to hold a piece of that history," said Jennifer Jones, a curator who oversees the flag at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Some are more valuable than others. The 15th Cotton Star was cut away sometime before 1873 and remains missing. That's all for your Bosco break. Back to the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to Real Life with DJ Homeschool on radio.dominican.edu. We just talked about healthy sleep habits, and we are going to dive right into beauty and talk about the many benefits and uses of honey. So I'm not a honey fan for the taste alone. You know, at the ferry station in San Francisco, there's this really cute booth, and it's filled entirely of honey products. They have honey-flavored snacks. They have jars of all different kinds of honey. They have those multicolored honey sticks. But it is really, really cute and really, really popular. Whenever I'm there with the twins, they're always trying to convince me to buy them little stuffed bumblebees in the display cases. Anyways, back to the point here, is honey is really popular, and it started making an even bigger name for itself for a number of reasons, aside from putting it in your tea like your mom would do when you were sick. Honey is really becoming an everyday beauty commodity. A few reasons why. Honey is a natural humectant, which means that it attracts and retains the moisture in the air, and that's going to go to your skin and leave it feeling really soft and supple. It also contains antioxidants, and those neutralize free radicals. And what this means is that it protects your skin from the sun, and it improves the skin's ability to rejuvenate and refresh itself naturally. I love it when natural things help heal your body. There's a saying in chiropractic is the power that made the body heals the body, and this really just kind of reiterates that. I love it. So it is a natural antibacterial, and honey speeds the healing of infections and wounds, including acne. It's something that you can put directly on your skin, believe it or not. You're going to have to shower afterwards, so beware, because you're going to be all nice and sticky. But honey's a fantastic use. It's good for those with sensitive skin. It's an anti-irritant, so it's not going to bother you if you have, you know, really sensitive, irritable skin or a skin disorder like rosacea. So that's really cool. It's really a well-rounded product. And another benefit, and it's probably my absolute favorite from personal experience, is for your hair. Since it's a moisturizer, honey can relieve dry, itchy scalp if you have it. I personally don't have dry scalp, but it really does cut down on the dandruff. It gives your hair an amazing, fabulous shine that would make every model jealous. And I want to give you guys a quick recipe here on for a hair mask that has honey. And it's really just going to help moisturize and be really shiny and help strengthen your hair. It's really easy. It's something that I feel completely comfortable giving you a recipe for over the air, because you'll be able to remember this no problem. It's two very simple ingredients. It's 1 tablespoon coconut oil, 1 tablespoon raw honey. And all you have to do is put it into a small saucepan on the stove and heat it on low just until it's melted, and just stir it up. So you want to do this when your hair is wet, and you'll just divide your hair into sections and transfer this little coconut oil honey mixture onto your hair. Make sure it's really nice and coated. Next up, you'll want to wrap your hair in a bun. And if you want to, I've seen a lot of people, they'll cover their hair with a shower cap, but you don't have to if you don't want to. And then you can just let the hair mask soak in your hair for 30 to 40 minutes. You know, you really, there's no such thing as too long. You can really leave this on your hair for however long, but 30, 40 minutes is plenty of time. Then just hop in the shower and you can wash your hair with regular shampoo or conditioner. And this hair mask is really, really great for any type of hair. And it's really cool because you can mix honey with other common kitchen ingredients. If you Google honey face masks, you'll come up with 100 recipes for masks for your face that contain honey and probably coconut oil as well. And even you can use it straight out of a jar. Like I said, you can put it directly onto your skin. So no matter what you do, your skin will thank you. Another favorite of mine is something that I came across this summer. So my hair was thinning and it was breaking really, really easily. So my whole life I've always had really fine hair, but I've had a lot of it. And I was seeing clumps of it in the shower. You know, you lose hundreds and hundreds of hairs every day, but I was noticing a lot more. And, you know, every time I would sit in my bed, I would find hair behind me and it was just falling out. And, you know, it was all over the place. And I knew it wasn't a good sign. So I started taking some vitamins, got some things tested out, and, you know, trying to be proactive about it. And I really wanted my hair to grow. Well, I went on vacation and had forgotten to bring shampoo. So I ran down to the little market and, you know, to pick something up. It was a really small town, so it only had a couple of options at this little place. And they had herbal essences, and they happened to be on sale. And I've always loved their products. I've used them throughout the years. And I think why I love them so much is they really remind me of my mom. She used their shampoo when I was growing up. And so, you know how scents can trigger memories and thoughts? That's something that whenever I smell it, I automatically think of my mom. And I remember sitting in her bathroom while she would take a shower and just talk to her and, you know, be in there while she was doing her hair and makeup. And so it just really brought me back to my childhood. So they had a new product at this little market on vacation, and I hadn't seen it before. And it was Herbal Essences, and it was called Honey, I'm Strong. And it said that you're supposed to get 10 times stronger hair in just one wash with Herbal Essences Honey, I'm Strong. So I thought, all right, I'm going to try this out. That sounds nice. And the formula is supposed to coat each strand of your hair, and it's supposed to help protect the outer layer, and it provides strength against future damage and help repair the current damage. So it does this by repairing the hair's protective layer that regulates moisture, and it mimics the natural F layer. And so I was like, the F layer? What is an F layer? And so I looked it up, and what I came up with is that it's the natural chemical layer that is the main source of hydration and protection of your hair. So there's that honey being that natural hydrating factor, moisturizer. So I bought the shampoo, and I noticed within 3 days, I had beautiful shiny hair. People were giving me compliments on it all the time, but I also had really stronger strands. I was getting fewer split ends, and I had less hair loss, and so that was really cool for me. I had really nice, voluminous hair. So with actual honey being in the ingredient list, it really coated all my strands and really added that extra layer of protection and strength. I'm a really big fan of this shampoo and conditioner duo. I've recently discovered a Honey, I'm Strong strengthening serum that you can put on your hair, and I'm dying to try it. I purchased it. I just have yet to try it. So I really encourage you to try the shampoo if you know, it's really good for anybody. That's the thing. It's good for anybody. It will moisturize any hair, but especially if you need a little bit of hair repair, if you dye or blow dry your hair or curl it a lot, I would encourage you to try this. I'm really glad I found it. Plus, it's super cheap. It's like $3 a bottle, and it's available at Target. I've seen it at Safeway and wherever else Herbal Essence products are sold. If you have a Walmart or something like that, other grocery stores, but they also sell it online. I buy mine off of Amazon, and so I can kind of stockpile it, because that's something I always forget to buy at the store, and then I'm in the shower and I'm out of shampoo, and it's just a bad situation. So now that we have your hair covered, I want to throw in a really great beauty product that contains honey in its ingredient list, and it's Burt's Bees, of course. And I got a sample of this Burt's Bees. It's the Natural Nourishing Collection, and it's a body moisturizer in milk and honey. And it's really creamy. It's got a nice, subtle, sweet smell, and it's really just what your skin needs from a moisturizer. And it's dermatologist tested, which is really nice, and it combines milk, honey, and vitamin E, along with coconut and grapeseed oils. And so it's got a really nice blend of nutrients there. And it's really designed to help soften your skin. And the combo is clinically proven to moisturize for up to 24 hours, which is really great for busy people, people on the go. And if all of that isn't enough to convince you, it's really non-greasy, and it absorbs, and it really has a nice natural fragrance. And that's a big plus for me. I admittedly am a perfume junkie. So for daily lotion that I can use on my entire body and then again periodically throughout the day on my hands, that's a big bonus to not have a really strong scent. I don't want to have 500 different smells on and, you know, just be this walking perfume ad. I really don't like that. But so it's got this really nice scent that's really good for anybody. Really nice and subtle. But my favorite thing I think about this item is that it's good for your skin, but it's also good for the environment. So there's a company that I've done some research on. It started at work, but I've done a little bit more research on it. And it's a group called the Environmental Working Group. And they have a subsection of their website, and it's a database, and it's called Skin Deep. And the Environmental Working Group is a group that it really empowers people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And they drive a lot of consumer choice, and they do a lot of civic action, and they do a lot of research and really try to keep the public informed. So one way that they do that is through this Skin Deep database, and it has over 60,000 beauty products, and it lists their ingredients and their level of toxicity, and it gives you a nice breakdown of why these products aren't good for you. So each product comes with a rating between a 0 and 10 scale, 10 being toxic and 0 being healthy for, you know, you and the environment. So this lotion, the Milk and Honey lotion, is rated at a 3, which falls under the green category, making it safe for you and yours to use with limited toxicity and very, very few harmful chemicals. And so this website is really cool. I really would urge you guys to try it out and do a little medicine cabinet makeover. Just kind of go in there, look at all the products that you're using. You can type them into this database and pull it right up. It'll tell you if what you're using can be a skin irritant or even if it has chemicals that are known to cause cancer. So it's really, really big eye opener. You know, sunscreen is a big one that I've researched on there, and I've completely switched over sunscreens now because of all the toxic and harmful chemicals in them. So I had a lot of fun researching all of these products, and I hope that you can find a nice use for honey. And I'm just really excited to try that coconut oil and honey hair mask this weekend. I'm really, really excited. So we are going to take a quick break. And when we get back on Real Life on radio.dominican.edu, we are going to talk relationships with student health and your doctors. So stay tuned, everyone, and don't go anywhere. You're just too good to be
true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You be like coming at you with another Bosco break. Christina Chesterman, 21, was studying to be a nurse when she was killed by a suspected drunk driver last year. But she managed to save lives anyway. A registered organ donor, Chesterman gave 5 people, including a baby, new life, and now the woman who received her heart wants to do something in return. Susanna Vieira, 64, has vowed to check off everything on Chesterman's bucket list, written down on a piece of paper her mom recently found. One of the items, save someone's life. Another, be in 4 places at once. Kinda trippy if you ask me. Vieira had completed several of the tasks already, including learning to fly a plane and riding a camel, ABC News reports. Vieira says, together we will finish her bucket list. I'd like to thank all things I continue to accomplish in my life. I'm taking Christina with me, Vieira continues. Chesterman's mom adds that she felt an instant connection to the woman she just met. Chesterman's friends are also helping to complete the bucket list, including one who took Chesterman's picture along for a first-class flight and another who went skydiving in her honor. You wonder why someone like that is taken so young, but I believe Christina was one of those very rare people who was so complete as a person already, says one friend. The rest of us are just a work in progress. As for another miracle, Jahia McMath, the 13-year-old girl declared brain dead not long after having her tonsils removed in December, has been kept on feeding and breathing support at St. Peter's University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Now, the Oakland, California girl's family says Jahia is once again showing brain activity, and they're asking a Bay Area court to walk back its declaration that she is dead. The newspaper notes that were this to happen, it would mark the first time an individual declared brain dead was found to regain brain activity. One prominent physician says, Such a reversal would be miraculous and would force us to re-examine the whole nature of death in America. Then he added, but I don't believe it. The family's attorney, meanwhile, says he has medical experts, including world-class experts on brain death, who will testify she is not brain dead. In court documents filed Tuesday, Christopher Dolan also said and claimed Jaheen now responds to commands given by her mother. He says the determination of brain death occurred when there was swelling in her brain, and he says that swelling has subsided. While family members haven't disclosed who is privately paying for Jahia's care, they've acknowledged that by reversing her status as dead, she'd be eligible for estate benefits just like others who are on ventilators and not brain dead. A hearing is set for Thursday. That's it for your Bosco Break. Get back to the show.
Wow, thank you, Bosco. I hope all of you guys really enjoyed that. That was super eye-opening. I found that quite interesting about that young girl considered brain dead. I really hope that she is able to pull through, and good for her family for standing up for themselves and really pushing for her life. So we are here and we are going to talk relationships on Real Life. And, you know, we're always looking for a way to enrich ourselves and others around us. And a big issue that I've seen in college is doctors. And we're so used to, you know, our childhood pediatricians and the local doctors that we would go to. So, you know, as college students, we leave, we're heading out of home and we're going into the quote real world, and we're leaving this comfort of our doctors at home. However, what most students don't realize is that there are a lot of great medical professionals everywhere, and most college campuses have student health centers that are available to them. There might not always be an actual physician on staff, but there will be great nurses, nurse practitioners, and EMTs. And here at Dominican, we have, most of you probably already know this, but for those of you that don't, we have an amazing, amazing student health center. We have a team of a nurse practitioner and an EMT, and our nurse practitioner is one of the most thorough and kindest NPs that I've ever met. And I have met quite a few of them in my day. But she is willing to talk about anything and everything with me and with every patient. And she treats every single patient with respect and the utmost care. And I knew I liked her the first time when I met her when I went to student health, because I was feeling really, really sick. And I was a freshman and I had flu-like symptoms. And what she did is she gave me a ton of natural remedies and recommendations, including sleep, believe it or not. And she focused on these natural remedies rather than just wanting to pump me full of medication just to mask the symptoms. And so I thought that was really amazing. She really cared about our overall health, not just what was going on in the moment. She wanted us to be healthy individuals, not just get rid of our sickness. So that was really kind of amazing. They also do really great follow-up calls with all of the patients. And, you know, that really gives you a really nice sense of comfort. College is a place, it's really hard when you get sick for the first time here. You know, usually you're really far away from your parents. Not everybody has the luxury of being able to go home. But for those of, you know, those people that do, that's really lucky for them. But, you know, it's really difficult. And usually every time, you know, the first time is really difficult. And then after that, every time, your impending illness is usually on the day of a test or a presentation, or you have work or a game. You know, it's always something. You get the idea. But thankfully, here at Dominican, we have an amazing student health center that is available to us. For those of you at Dominican, you can locate them in Bertrand Hall. If you stop in and say hi, they will be the first to greet you when they see you around campus. And so it's really just this, it's a really great thing that they have set up for us. It's a really nice student benefit. And so for me, I know personally that it was really hard finding new doctors that I trusted really well. You know, being type 1 diabetic, I had my team all set up. And these people knew me really well. They knew my habits and hangups, and they were always there for me whenever need be. They're familiar with my conditions and how to make adjustments that worked really well. And so a new doctor and a new team was a little bit stressful to find, but eventually it happened, and I became even more comfortable with my team of college doctors. They got to know me, and they treated me as a grown-up, and that was really great. And of course, they want to talk about your full health history. And to me, that's something that's really important to do. You know, I have a lot of friends and I've met a lot of people in college, and they come from all different backgrounds. I have friends that have been abused. I have friends that have been raped, some who suffer from anxiety, drug addictions, depression, you know, many, and a lot of other health concerns. And sometimes they go unnoticed to the general public. I have this story that I want to talk to you guys about, and it's one thing that I'll never forget, and it was about it's a really good friend of mine, and we kind of became friends by accident, and they were rooming with another friend of mine, and this friend and I became closer and closer, and we talked more and more, and, you know, we got deeper into our knowledge of each other, and my friend started confiding in me more, and it turns out that they have a really deep-seated depression and were struggling really badly with it. And that really, it really opened up my eyes to how people live with their own personal struggles and kind of have to mask them. And it can be a really, really scary situation. I realized that this person really needed friends and really needed someone to be there. And they weren't in talks with student health or any doctors yet. And I decided that it was my responsibility as a friend to kind of check in with some health professionals. So I went to student health, and they were really understanding. They didn't ask questions that weren't necessary, and I was able to communicate with my friend and kind of talk about some constructive conversations to have with my friend that could aid in the recovery and help ease the stress of handling a depression while trying to balance classes, you know, and other college stresses. And it was really nice because they were really attentive to what I needed. They weren't trying to get too much information. They really were very, you know, they just really focused on the issue and how they could help. And so as time went on, my friend and I actually stopped talking for a while. They became pretty upset with me, and it's for reasons that I don't understand as still today. And it was really quite a struggle. And, you know, I miss them, but I knew deep down that it was due to a depression and an anger. And we've since talked about this and really found it interesting, you know, how people's minds work when they're struggling with something. But I knew that if I was struggling, my friend was struggling 100 times more. So I would still send periodic texts to them, you know, just checking in, making sure they knew I loved them, you know, the whole nine yards. So I would do that. And then we also had a lot of mutual friends, and they would kind of check in and make sure everything was kind of staying on track and just keep an eye out and monitor without being too intrusive, you know, of our friend's space. So eventually my friend and I started speaking again, and it was at the point where they were really, really struggling. They were really starting to go on, you know, from a series of events, they were really hitting a downhill slope. And they sent one text, and I knew that I needed to be back by their side, and we could start handling the problems together again. And so I knew something that just, I just knew it wasn't right. Do you ever get that gut feeling when you know something is really rough and it's not getting any better? That's where it was. So after a day to collect my thoughts, I contacted the campus staff, and we set up an emergency contact in case the situation, someone that I could call 24 hours a day, you know, any time of day, in case the situation went really badly. But the next day, I went with my friend and I took them to student health, and they were escorted by a really great nurse to see a psychiatrist, and they got a full examination and a preliminary counseling session until they could find a full-time therapist to get some help and, you know, really just take on that depression and take it by the reins. So it was a really emotional struggle for everyone involved, and I personally have never struggled with depression, so I can't speak from firsthand experience what it's like to feel those feelings. But I have seen the effects that it has on a person, and I know that it is a really tough place to be in. However, it was really a comfort knowing that our school really had our backs. They didn't just have my back, but they also, more importantly even, they had my friend's back. And so that was something that was really awesome. You know, all schools are equipped to deal with situations that are difficult. And, you know, if they don't have the answer right away, they're really going to do a lot they're going to go forward and they're going to find you someone who does have the answer. And they're really going to equip you with the tools to be a better you and really kind of take charge of your life. So student health zones are always a safe zone that you can talk about anything and everything with them. And so, you know, they're going to talk to you and they're really going to, they care about your well-being and they're going to make sure that you have an overall really great life. This is your life. It's your health and it's your happiness. And so while you are ultimately in control, student health is a really great backup. And there's really no need to avoid talking to them about anything. And so I really hope that by sharing this story with you, that's something that is was a really big part of my life and a really, really big growing experience for me. And so I hope that by sharing this, I can encourage you, you know, if you're in a sticky situation, to take action and to take care of yourself and to build those relationships with student health, because they're really going to be the ones to have your back. So let's fast forward a little bit and we are going to talk inspiration. I have taken the twins. They love to go to the movies. I've taken them so many times and they just love to go. There's something about it that they just really enjoy. And it's really fun to see them so excited. You know, the amount of excitement that they get over a bucket of popcorn and 2 hours of uninterrupted TV time is, you know, it's just amazing. So I took the twins to see a movie and it was kind of a bust. We saw Earth to Echo and it was just a little bit too old for them. And so I really wanted to regain some points with them. And I decided to take them to a matinee and we watched Dolphin Tale 2. And it was the cutest movie I think I've ever seen. I fell completely in love with this movie. I knew it would be a hit because Nico loves dolphins. He has one that he sleeps with every night. And if he doesn't have it, it's not a good situation. Like, he's got to have this dolphin. So I knew that this one was going to be really exciting, really upbeat, and something that everyone was going to love. And so the description of the movie is this. It says, it has been several years since young Sawyer Nelson and the dedicated team at Clearwater Marine Hospital, headed by Dr. Clay Haskett, rescued Winter. Winter's a dolphin. So with the help of Dr. Cameron McCarthy, who developed a unique prosthetic tail for an injured dolphin, they were able to save her life. Yet the fight is not over. Winter's surrogate mother has passed away, leaving Winter without the only pool mate that she has ever known. However, the loss of Panama, the surrogate mother, may have even greater repercussions for Winter, who, according to USDA regulations, cannot be housed alone. Because a dolphin's social behavior requires them to be paired with other dolphins. The team must find a companion for her before Clearwater loses their beloved Winter to another aquarium. So that's really the basis of the movie. This was Dolphin Tale 2, and so Dolphin Tale 1 really covered this prosthetic dolphin fin and really helping out Winter. Something happened where she was either born without a tail or had an accident, and so she no longer has a tail, and she was going to die because her spine wasn't aligned right without her tail. And so this really great team of marine biologists got together and they created this prosthetic tail for her. And so she's able to swim and, you know, eat and, you know, live in this pool at Clearwater Marine Hospital and become kind of a dolphin celebrity. And so now the dolphins have to live together. And so her pool mate has since died. And that was one sad part about that movie that does happen inside the film. And so now the movie Dolphin Tale 2 tracks the process of other incoming dolphins and trying to find a housemate for Winter. And the way it worked, you know, Clearwater Marine Hospital rehabilitates animals and then they send them back out into their natural environment, whether that's a dolphin or a sea turtle. You know, they've even done whales. They do otters and, you know, all kinds of different things and anything that's in water. And so they even had a dolphin come in who had really bad sunburn. She got caught up on a shore and was sunburned really, really badly. But after a couple weeks of rehabilitation, she was fine and ready to be set back out into the ocean. And so this dolphin was not able to live with Winter. So she was about to get taken away. And then she comes back and they rescue this really small baby dolphin and rehabilitate her to make her Winter's new poolmate. And so through this really awesome film, after it, I wanted to look up their mission and find a little bit more about their rescue hospital. And so their mission is to promote environmental awareness and respect for marine life. And they're really well known for their location in Clearwater Beach, Florida. They are a leader in collaborative partnerships with a bunch of other marine environmental awareness groups and research projects and, you know, just all around marine stewardship. So they also have an aquarium. So the Clearwater Aquarium staff, they have volunteers that work every day to help rescue this marine life and really provide really advanced and really effective care to just maximize the opportunity to return these sick and injured animals to their natural homes. And they've been doing that for years. A couple of interesting facts I pulled from their website. Some statistics here. I'm a huge statistics junkie, which is funny because I don't like to do math, but I really like reading about, you know, statistics and things. So since 2010, CMA has released more than 180 animals, and of those, and 35,000 sea turtle hatchings alone. 35,000. That is a ton. So they're rehabilitating animals and just bringing new marine life into the world all the time, which I think that's just beautiful. And they, since 2010, they have had nearly 1,000 emergency animal responses. So they're doing rescue all the time. So of these animals, nearly 350 of them were able to be fully rehabilitated and set back into their own home. And so you can look this stuff up on their website too. It's right there. It's a really cool site. I'm going to give you the link to that website in a little bit. But this Clearwater Marine Aquarium is, you know, they're really the leader in marine mammal research, and especially throughout Florida. And every year, the CMA stranding team, you know, for stranded animals, they join forces with the U.S. Geological Survey and other supporting organizations, and they conduct manatee health assessments of these endangered species. And so the members work with vets, researchers, marine biologists, and they try to capture and give medical assessment, and then they'll tag and release these manatees once they're up and healthy again. And by conducting these assessments, they're really able to promote research and conservation of this endangered species, as well as their ecosystem. You know, we have to remember, this isn't just our world, we share it with animals too. So they have a lot of response teams, and they're actually doing research on a 32-foot female sperm whale that was stranded. And so that was really cool. You know, they don't get a whole lot of whales, but that's something that's really fun. And the CMA also has developed a dorsal fin ID program, and that helps identify and monitor wild dolphins in the area. And it's to better understand their patterns and their behaviors. That way, when they get a dolphin that, you know, needs rehabilitation, they're able to treat it more effectively and efficiently and really just tackle, you know, any issues or challenges that they might have. So I was really happy to see this movie about with such a great message. And, you know, it's really important. It's a really big issue, you know, wildlife conservation. And so I thought it was really awesome how they tied in that great message to a really fun children's film. And really made it this interesting. And this is a true story. And so that's what inspired me to really research this, is the story of Winter and Hope and these two dolphins who have found each other and found partnership and really just furthered society's knowledge of wildlife conservation. So I was really impressed. And I really encourage everyone to check out their website. So I'm going to give you the link right now. It's seawinter.org. SEEWINTER.org. And so look it up, you know, look up this research on your own. And if you're in the Florida area, you can definitely go visit this aquarium. I think that would be so cool. The twins are actually, their dad is from he's from Cuba, but he grew up in Florida, and so they travel back to Florida all the time, and so they're always trying to convince their parents to take them there right now, but they're about ready to go here in a couple weeks, so we'll see how that goes. I'll get back to you on that. So the CMA is really planning on expanding, and they're actually in the works of it right now, and they're always taking donations to further their research. And so I made a donation, and I encourage you to find a charity or an organization that you believe in, because it will make you feel good, I promise. So before we go, I want to take a quick second to congratulate the Penguin, both men and women's golf teams. The women had a tournament this week, and I went and watched my team play, and they had a combined score of 319, and they won a match at Peacock Gap, our home course, to Holy Names, who shot 373. So that's a 54-stroke lead, and so I was really proud of my girls, and it was a really fun tournament to go watch. And the men also had a tournament this week. They just got back late last night, and they were up at Chico, and the men finished 7th out of 15 with a 3-round total of 906. So I was really proud of them. So thank you all for listening. That's all for today. I hope you have a fantastic week, and I'll see you right here next Wednesday at 8 a.m. for Real Life on Penguin Radio. Have a beautiful day. You to know that I am happy for you. I wish nothing but the best for you both. I know the version of me, she preferred it like me, but she